information that comes in, you request the court for a permission to amend your complaint or amend your action, and you explain why, and right along with your request you put exactly what you want to say. Okay, you have the actual paper, because, and then they will either say yay or nay. So you have the request, but then you have the actual paper you're requesting to be allowed filed.
So suffice to say that all the research and all the code research and all that needs to be done up front completely.
Absolutely, when you're at law. Okay, see, in equity proceedings, they allow you to make general complaints and provide the facts later. Now, if nobody says anything, you'll provide the facts at the trial. Okay? But what actually happens, if you have halfway decent attorneys, they'll do what's called discovery. Why is there discovery? Very simple reason. You didn't present all the facts. Now, when we're at law, we laugh at discovery. Okay? These attorneys, you know, we throw the whole thing in. In fact, in one of our demurs, the attorney complained that we threw in all the facts too. You know? I kind of laughed and chuckled to myself when I saw that. But the fact, you know, and they're expecting to do discovery. Okay? Well, how can you discover something that doesn't exist? I mean, we've shown you everything. Okay? So we just ignore them. They come through with this, and we hope that they go to the court demanding discovery, demanding us to comply. You know why we hope? Because every single time they file a paper, they run their costs up. And that's the objective, one of the objectives. Okay? We don't frivolously run their costs up. But if they want to run their own costs up, hey, go for it. You know, I love it. And because every time they put a paper in, they're charging their customer $1,500 or so. Okay? So it's great. We like it. The more the merrier. And here's what their options are. Let's say you ignore their discovery request. Now, discovery is designed to be reasonably efficient. They simply have to send you a notice. The attorney sends a notice, and that is considered a court order, even though the judge didn't sign it. And so you're expected to comply. But obviously, you have complied in advance when you provided all the evidence. They can go then to the court demanding one of two things. They can demand A, that you produce the evidence that they're demanding, or B, that they can do what's called a motion in limine, which is to prohibit you from presenting any further evidence. Okay? If you're unwilling to disclose the evidence in advance, because the theory is everything should be out on the table as far as facts go. Now, how you interpret the facts, that's private until you get to the trial. So the interpretation, they don't have privy to, but what the facts are, they have it. There's a beautiful case in Georgia. This case, the judgment was for $5 million. It was the largest judgment by a jury in the history of Georgia at the time. I don't know, it happened back in the 60s or 70s, something like that. What it was that this truck came over this hill. There were a whole bunch of cars there stopped because of an accident. And this truck just plowed through, big semi, just throwing cars out of the way, okay? And he went through, he made a nice pathway through, and he continued on. Companion truck, same company, came through, saw the clear path, and went through too. He didn't hit anybody, but he went through, okay? Didn't stop. So there was, in the very last car of the line, there was a little girl, and she got killed in the process, okay? So, when the truck came through. The first one. Yeah, the second one didn't hit anything. His problem was he didn't stop. He should have stopped, okay? And but anyhow, so this little girl died. So the insurance company and the defendants, because they demanded to see the evidence on discovery. And part of the evidence was a lot of film footage. So I said, sure, here it is. So they looked at it. Well, that was the evidence, yes. However, when they made their strategy, The plaintiff made his strategy. The plaintiff rearranged the film. Same stuff, but they arranged it. And they arranged it so it told a story. And the last little film strip was a whole movie showing this little girl, all dressed up pretty, saying, bye, bye bye, bye bye. And she died. What an impact that had on the jury. That was strategy. Okay? That's different from facts. So when you present your facts, tell a story. Tell a story that has impact, even if it's on paper. If they want to know what the facts are, at the time that you file the lawsuit, well, it's a little difficult because it's all on paper. I mean, you don't have that opportunity to rearrange unless you actually go to trial. You know, there's a lot, big difference between strategy and facts. So be sure, if you want to win, you tell your story. Make it a good one. But you don't have to tell the other side until the critical moment. Yes.
So you said the defendant might send out a notice for discovery. Do you have to answer that?
No, just ignore it. They got all the facts. What's their point? They don't like it. They can always take you to court. Cost them $1,500 for each motion they make, or whatever the current price is. Sure. Just ignore it. When you get to court, they're gonna say, Your Honor, we demanded discovery. We want the facts. And you're saying, what facts? Your Honor, I want an order prohibiting them from presenting any of those hidden facts. Okay. You know, because you got the whole story in your original lawsuit. Yes.
So when you file a complaint, you have to attach all your evidence of the facts along with it? Or
yes, you put all your evidence, everything, 100%. There's nothing to say once you filed your lawsuit. If you have anything more to say, it's because they said something you have to, in their answer, that you have to take care of. But no, you present the whole story.
No, the story is one thing, but like, you know, other evidence that to support your
no, there is no other evidence. It's all there the first time.
I mean, just the fact that you put down whatever happened, but I mean, evidence.
Which part of presenting all the evidence don't you understand?
I'm serious. Attach any piece of
anything, whatever.
Yes.
If you got something to tell, you tell it then. You're not going to get a second chance.
So you have to attach.
You have pictures. You have records. You have medical records. You have X-rays.
Affidavits.
Anything, whatever you got, you tell the story the first time. That's what we did with the Aurora's case. We put it all in there, the whole thing. The court records from the other court, whatever we were objecting to, we put it all right there. So there was nothing left to discuss. Okay? So a very important concept of the common law. That's why there's no discovery. What is there to discover? And these attorneys, you know, these attorneys all claim to be attorneys at law. That means common law. But in truth, all of them are attorneys in equity. They don't know common law. Yes, sir.
Attorneys can ask for all sorts of things.
Sure.
That may or may not be germane to what's going on. So if they ask for inside leg measurement, what's the correct response?
Well, if you deny them that, they can do two things. One of them is they can ask the court for a court order to provide that evidence, okay, which is unlikely if the evidence doesn't exist. And the second thing they can do is that they can ask the court for an order prohibiting putting that into the case. What do you care? It's not relevant, right? Let them get a motion in limine. In limine is two words, I-N and then L-I-M-I-N-I. In limine, yes, sir.
Wouldn't the sovereign as the tribunal make the decision on whether their request is appropriate, valid, or can
absolutely be? Right. If it's your court, you make the decision. Okay. Does that make sense so far? No discovery in there. Anyhow, so from step three on, and this applies to both sides, from step three on, it's either a peremptory plea or a demur. In fact, before I forget, I'll put that in there. All right. Now let's... A demurrer, but not a demur. 1R. I think with 1 hour it'd be demurer. Okay. Now, let's look at the actual lawsuit. This is called the caption. Okay? Okay. So, in a normal action here, where I'm assuming you're the plaintiff here, what you would do is you would put the name and address in the upper left-hand corner. This is the California style. So the phone number is optional. They definitely want the phone number, and they will almost try to order you to put a phone number on there. But the fact of the matter is that this is a slow-moving process. There's no need for a phone number. Phone numbers are for when they want to play games. They want to give you short notice on things. Okay? And we've met that issue head on in court. And the judge is always back down. Because finally, what typically the judge says is, you better check your mail because, we're not responsible if you miss a call. All right? Well, there's no law that requires you to have a telephone. So, yes.
They sometimes say they said things over the phone that they didn't.
Oh, that's right. Sometimes he says that sometimes they will claim they said something on the phone that they did not. So, yeah, I like to have things in writing. That removes all question as to who said what. Okay? So it's good not to have a phone. And then you identify your status, like you're the plaintiff or you're the attorney. Okay? Well, obviously you're not the attorney, so you'll always be the plaintiff. But that's your capacity. Because by looking at that, a person can tell, is this paper from the plaintiff, or is it from the defendant, or is it from a third party? Could be a friend of the court. Whatever. So, because there's that possibility. So you always, in the upper left-hand corner, put the identification. Now, I want you to notice that the type style that we have here, this looks like it came out of a typewriter. What you're looking at is courier. Okay? Now, the rules say that you can have courier or Times New Roman. In other words, you can have fixed spacing, which is what this is, monospacing, or you can have proportional spacing, which is what your Times New Roman is. I grew up with a typewriter, so I like this kind of type, and this is the legal type that's been traditional. And I stay away from fancy stuff. I do not use colors. I mean, you have to assume with legal papers that it's the words that are important, not the appearance of the words. In other words, I normally do not make things bold. Everything is the same color all the way across. Maybe if it's a really important point, I might make an exception. But generally speaking, the style of the paper is very, very gray. Okay? Very little emotion. And it doesn't mean you can't put emotion into it, but because this is how attorneys write. You see, an attorney's representing somebody else, he's not emotionally involved. And these are the kind of papers that, frankly, judges like to have. They like to have attorney-written papers. So if you're talking to the enemy, you want to be able to communicate in the style that they're accustomed to. If you deviate from that style, make sure you get some profit out of it. In other words, don't look like a kook. Look like somebody, hey, that was a good thing to do at this point. Whatever it is you choose to do. Yes, sir?
What about plaintiff improper or pro se or sui juris? Or what about even possibility of putting in sovereign plaintiff?
I stay away from all those words because I don't know what they mean.
Well, you know sovereign.
No. Not at that point in time. Not at that point. I'm the plaintiff. What more do you need? Okay? Everybody understands plaintiff. Everything else requires interpretation or is different. The world knows plaintiff or attorney. I don't put pro se. The reason I don't put pro se is because the phrase pro se means you are representing yourself. You are your own attorney. You are not yourself, but rather representing yourself. Okay? Once you become an attorney, you're a private attorney for this one case, and your client is yourself. And once you become an attorney, you now go into the jurisdiction of the court. Well, it's your court anyway, but nevertheless, it's a different way. It's much better to be the king himself than somebody speaking for the king.
Well, that's what impropria persona is, improper.
Yeah, I said pro se. Okay, and
improper then.
Yeah, improper, which is an abbreviation for impropria persona, that means you are yourself. But hey, I'm the plaintiff. That's good enough. You know, yes.
Yeah, I would like to share about the word plaintiff.
Plaintiff, huh?
Yeah. When I was at the hallway, when they pulled me from the holding cell, before I went inside the court, the meaning of the plaintiff is you exercise your power, full power, directly. And when I add the word independently as a Jewish jurist, that's why I was inside the court. But when I was right in the hallway, mm-hmm. I found that that I don't have to be shackled. I go in the court without the shackle.
If you're a plaintiff?
I did act, even though I'm a defendant at that moment of time, but I act as a plaintiff. When
okay.
I told to my public defender that I'm going to exercise my full power directly, and two deputies listening, normally they hang at me before I go inside the court.
Mm-hmm.
But that moment of time, I don't have a shackle on me. So it makes a whole lot different when they know what you're talking about.
Okay, so you were in your own person, therefore they unshackled you.
Yes.
That's interesting. And the title you gave yourself was what?
Well, in my mind, I am a plaintiff.
Yes.
The meaning of it is you will say it, Bernie. Let's say Ron is my public defender.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say, you know, Ron, that's how I address the public defender. I call them by the first name.
Hell of a deal.
I don't call them lawyer or attorney.
Sure.
You know, I say, Ron, you know what? I'm just going to exercise my full power directly, you know.
Right. Well,
and I will not emphasize as mm-hmm. I am a plaintiff. I will not say that.
Uh-huh.
So they know the meaning of what I just said because I know plaintiff means. Plaintiff means you exercise your full right, your full
okay.
your full power.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah. So being the plaintiff means you're exercising your full powers. You're not giving up anything.
Aurora, mm-hmm. did you say sui juris?
Well, they don't
understand sui juris.
Okay, when I was inside a court, since I was talking about public defender in the hallway before I get into the court, I didn't say sui juris. I did say when I was in front of the judge that I said again that I would like to exercise my full power directly and independently as a sui juris. Now, the judge did not comprehend how I pronounced it, so I repeat myself twice. But, you know, normally just ignore you.
Okay.
So is sui juris even stronger or more appropriate than proper?
Well, sui juris does mean that you are in your own capacity. But look, this upper left-hand corner, all that is the contact. That's all that means. Who wrote the paper? Okay, was attorney or what?
Let me answer that, Mr. Bill. When we said proper, I did say that. Then they gave me this whole bunch of paper that I need to sign. But since I don't understand right there and then what I'm signing, even though I read through it twice, it's like I'm signing something that I'm not thoroughly understand. So even though they give me a moment, but guess what? I said, oh, I don't want to be a proper. But guess what? When I was about to sign it, the judge left. She went at the back. They gave me so ample time to take my time to really sign it. So in my gut feeling, something is wrong. I said, I'm not going to put myself into it. Because you're signing it, you're waiving your rights right there and then. Even though it says on the proper, to become a proper, you waive for counsel, something like that. So I back off, even though I said I would like to be a proper. So that's their lingo. Now, I'm not going to be in their statute. I'm going to remain who I am. I don't know how long it takes. That's why I keep testing the water. That's why either I get burned or whatnot, or cold, whatnot. It doesn't matter. As long as I stand on it. your own research. I'm on discovery too.
Okay, well, the next thing on this is the... Oh, again, another question? Okay.
On if a person is a non-attorney, can they represent a plaintiff?
Well, you are the plaintiff and you can represent yourself, yes.
No, I mean, like, if somebody else doesn't know anything about the procedure, can I represent them? Do I need to file any kind of attorney or anything?
Yes, but only if you have the court's permission, and the court will not grant permission if you're not a member of the bar. But there are exceptions to that. In fact, there was a case where this father was representing his child in court. And so the opposing attorney objected to that, and the judge overruled the attorney and let the father speak for the child as if the father were an attorney. That happens. You see, anybody can represent anybody in court if the court allows it. And in fact, if it's your court, you could actually have an attorney speak for you if you grant them permission. And I mean, that's the theory.
So can I speak for my mother?
Yes, but
what do I have to do?
Yes, but let me say this, that what's the primary purpose of the court? To put on a good show. You're not putting on a good show when you're not an attorney in their minds and you're speaking for them. It's not, just doesn't make a good show to them, and that's the people you're trying to impress. You know, if you are going to represent somebody, and if you can secure the permission, then you better be sure you put on a good show, because you start off at a disadvantage. A lot of times your credibility depends on their initial image of you. And if you are known not to be an attorney before you even speak, right away you have to prove yourself in their minds. Whereas if you're an attorney, you start off on a different level in their minds.
How about on the complaint? On the plaintiff, can you put... can I put my name instead of my mom?
If you wrote the paper, you're the contact, sure. But then your mom... You see, again, like I said, you have to get the permission of the court to represent your mom. And look...
That's your document that you have to file?
Well, let me say this. You're talking about their way of doing things, their system. Your mom is not here in class, and she's not learning this stuff. You are, and I'm telling you, you're walking into a trap if you try to represent your mom.
What is your suggestion?
I suggest either your mom get educated, and if she's not about to do that, remember there's an old saying, a maxim in law. You know what maxims are, right? Okay, maxims are general principles of law that guide the tribunal. It guides them in their decision makings. One of the principles of or maxims is that the law does not protect he who slumbers on his rights. Okay, the law is not going to go out of its way to protect you. If you have no interest in your rights, then neither does the law. So if your mom is of a mind to not protect yourself, well, it's too bad. Creates a lot of work for you, because not only do you have to deal with the case, you also have to deal with her reluctance, and you also have to deal with the extra problem of somehow representing your mom's interests in the court that she's not interested in. And she'll say she's interested. I mean, I run into this all the time. There's no shortage of people who ask me to get involved with their cases. And it happens all the time. You know, I let them know right up front, I'll be happy to help you, but only if you'll help yourself. Okay? You don't want to get involved in your case? I'm no more interested in your case than you are. That gets rid of 99% of the challenges. Okay? Because people don't want to do what's necessary. I'll give them a reading assignment. Okay? I'll give them a reading assignment. They don't read. So you got a big problem on your hands when you go to handle somebody else's problems. And there are exceptions to that. You know? There are exceptions. You know, sometimes you get involved when you know you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Can I mention something, Mr.
Sure.
Bill?
Uh-huh.
It might sound of not just to as one of you all, but this is my point. I cannot really share something if I don't know the meaning of everything, because I don't want to mislead anybody. That's why it took 461 days before I finalized it's time for me to get out. It's about all of us here. we know we love our family, but we cannot start anything else without really taking it from us ourselves. The point of what I'm saying is, that's why I'm able to stand up even when I'm inside shackle and things like that in the 10th hour. A lot of people help me out, you know, read the Bible for your own comfort. But for me to stand here, I would like to share to you that it takes from you, it takes from each one of us for really what it stands for. So if you would like your mother to learn about this, I have 3 daughters. They don't want nothing to do with it. So what I did is, okay, cut them off. Perfected yourself first. And then if you know everything now, go ahead and teach. But until then, don't.
Yeah, it's a rough lesson that you have to learn. I've tried to help people in the past, and without their cooperation. Okay? In other words, they tell me they wanted me to help, and I would help. And then I would try to compensate for their lack of participation. And frankly, it doesn't work. So.
But if my mom has a language barrier, she says, no knowledge at all. How can she learn?
Always be a translator.
That's what I'm trying to do.
That's all right. You can be a translator. You're not responsible other than for the accuracy of the translation. That you are responsible. And sometimes you have to fill in because your mom doesn't know how to express things, and so you can fill in your translation because you're translating the ideas, not the words. Okay? So that's fine that you're helpful. But don't confuse your translating job with actually becoming like her attorney, because she may or may not go along with some of the things you want her to do, and some of the things you do might get her in jail depending on the type of case, because you might make mistakes. And so it really is a tough decision to make. You know, I've learned to back away from these things simply because I've tried too many times and seen how worthless it is to help somebody who doesn't want to be helped, although they say they want to be helped. It's no accident. These maxims that I talk about represent the wisdom of the ages. I mean, there's a lot of value there. You read those maxims. If you go to the California Civil Code, I think it's back in section 9000 something, or way at the end, or 900, whatever it is, way back at the end of the Civil Code, they have a whole collection of maxims. I don't know, a dozen or two dozen of them. And you should read those, because they express some very, very important points of philosophy that if you take them to heart, you realize it'll save you a lot of headache. Okay? And again, I know that we all have to go through this learning cycle where we sometimes take on tasks that we realize we shouldn't have. You know? So, okay, well, anyhow. You had a question back here, did you? I thought you did. Okay. Well, anyhow. All right, moving on. Now, the next thing down on this thing is the name of the court, Superior Court of California. And that's always on line 8. That's universal. So any court in California, you put the name of the court on line 8. That guarantees that there's room in the upper right-hand corner for the clerk to make the stamp, the filing stamp. Okay? And then you put the venue, which here it says County of Los Angeles. Venue means the geographical location, the actual location of the court. Then you, on the left side here, you have a little divide. On the left side, you put the plaintiff and defendants. On the right side, you put the case number. And then you need a brief description. Now, the whole idea of that little block there where the description is to give the reader some idea what this is all about. Okay? This description does not control your paper. It's simply an aid to understanding for the reader. But the real meat is in the body of the paper. And then, in the case of a common law or even equity law, you put the word verified, that means that at the end of your paper,